Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
I'm working on an idea for a television series now.
Oh, I see. The usual dysfunctional family with the wisecracking wife and kids and much harassed husband kind of thing? Yeah? Yeah.
What marital difficulties bring you here today?
I can't stand his snoring.
I hate her laugh.
Any things that you agree on?
Neither one of us likes guacamole.
Okay, that's the beginning. We can build on guacamole.
There you go. That's a clip from Crisis in Six Scenes. James Dempsey joins us once again. What is Crisis in Six Scenes?
So Crisis in Six Scenes is sort of the Amazon's big great white hope that all just fell apart as soon as it all came together. So if you can imagine,
so it was appropriately named then, perhaps.
Very much so. Well, actually, somewhat inappropriately named, because there's definitely more than six scenes in it. But but it is Woody Allen's first foray into TV in more than half a century.
Yeah.
So imagine if you are the guy who is head of Amazon Video, whose name I have written down here somewhere. His name is Roy Price. He manages to convince Woody Allen, I assume by throwing loads of money at him, to take a break from making, I guess, you know, semi-annual movies and create a TV show for the streaming service. Yeah. And they announced it pretty much just before, around this time, 2 years ago, because they announced it pretty much at the Cannes Film Festival. And it was seen as this great big, coup for Amazon to have managed to snag Woody Allen, this, you know, very prolific auteur of American cinema, one of the most famous filmmakers and writers of all time, despite his, you know, somewhat checkered and troubled past. that still he has enough pulling power to make him an interesting prospect.
Oh yeah,
and he definitely does. And it pretty much went wrong. I mean, from the get go, Woody Allen could not have been less enthused about this show if he tried. I mean, to read out a couple of the quotes he said about making it: I don't know how I got into this. I have no ideas and I'm not sure where to begin. My guess is that Roy Rice will regret this. And then after actually making it, he said, it was a catastrophic mistake. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm floundering. I expect this to be a cosmic embarrassment.
This is when it was finished.
Yes, this is before it aired.
Right.
So it went live on Amazon's video service in September, except it didn't come to our neck of the woods until about a week ago or
so. Okay.
Because of Amazon's also rather wrong-footed approach of, you know, releasing things at different times. For whatever rights reasons, there must be some, you know, there must be some red tape blocking it. But it has finally arrived our way. And it stars Woody Allen as Sidney Munsinger, who's this ad man, you know, copywriter, who effectively wants to be a novelist. And he's in his, you know, he's in his senior years, married to Elaine May, who's his wife Kay, who's a marriage counsellor. And it's set in the 1960s in, you know, in an America that is very much, an allegory for what America is today, in the sense that there's a lot of protesting going on, there's race riots, and particularly the sort of dissatisfaction with Vietnam is central to the plot. And essentially what happens is they are a couple living in this very affluent suburb of upstate New York. And one day, one evening more so, they hear a noise downstairs and someone has broken into their house. And it turns out to be Miley Cyrus as Lenny, this sort of wild child beatnik, anti-establishment protester who's on the run having escaped from prison, during which a prison guard got shot.
Right.
Now, when I explain that, and this is not to say I'm doing a good job of explaining it, it actually sounds like perfectly credible, fine. To say that it takes the entire first two episodes for any of that to actually happen is where the problem is.
Oh, dear.
Because they are really short. They're only about 23 minutes long. There are only six of them. And we have been told many times by Amazon and Woody Allen that there's not going to be a follow-up. And it just, if you are a diehard Woody Allen fan, of which I'm sure there are many people, I'd say there's just about enough in this to merit watching. If you're already a subscriber to the Amazon Video package, I wouldn't necessarily say it's worth putting your money where your mouth is in order to just watch this, unless you're some kind of Woody Allen purist and you absolutely have to see everything he's ever done. To me, it was like, it completely and utterly failed to understand what the point of television is. You know, that television is serialized stories.
And episodic, yes.
And episodic. Fine if you want to tell a series arc across six episodes. That's what most British sitcoms do in one season, because on the BBC, you generally get six episodes of half an hour. So that's what you're looking at here. This utterly fails to sort of... It flounders so badly in comparison to pretty much every other half-hour TV offering to understand what to do, in the sense that the first, you know, the first 24 minutes of episode one pretty much go absolutely nowhere. It is this very long extended introduction into Sydney and his wife Kay, with very little interaction between the two of them. And then finally something happens right at the very end and you get to the next episode, and that pretty much just extends that out into one scene.
It sounds like you're making a movie and cut it up into six bits.
Very much so. And it sounds like a movie that was plucked together out of spare pages of scripts, you know, going back decades.
Yeah.
Because really, there's just nothing remarkable to it. Now, I've watched of the six of them, because it's very easy when you're streaming a digital thing to just power through them, especially when they're only 23 minutes long as well. I've watched four of the six. I have read in reviews that the final two actually kind of make it worth your while if you stick it out. But the major problem is that it doesn't really curry any favour in the lead up to the final two. Mm. And that is really problematic. But I suppose it's just, it seems like such a missed opportunity, because regardless of whether you, you know, regardless of Woody Allen's checkered past, which there's no point us delving into, everyone can...
Everyone knows that.
But he, when he's good, he is really, really, really good.
Yeah.
And when he's not, he is just very average. And this is him sleepwalking his way through this project.
Mm. I think it always struck me about Woody Allen, it's kind of like, you know, the way they always say that novelists write the same novel over and over again. Woody Allen essentially makes the same film over and over again. It's a very good film.
Yes.
But there's almost like a parameter of quality where it can dip, at, you know, at the bottom of that. And sometimes it hits near the top of that. The other thing that always strikes me about Woody Allen is that he, no matter in what time period he sets it, it always feels like the 1970s. Because, you know, the modern world is kind of, it's a bit too modern for him now, at this stage of the game.
Very, very much so.
And the most modern medium, streaming TV, probably just doesn't understand it.
It would seem that he just doesn't even like TV to begin with anyway.
Yeah.
And certainly this concept of streaming is completely and utterly alien to him. You're absolutely right. It's funny, when I was watching the first episode, I was struck by how he's wearing as a costume these sort of like cord jeans and a green jumper and his glasses. And it's like he could be Woody Allen in literally any movie you've ever seen Woody Allen in.
Yes, yeah, with that faintly academic look.
Very much so.
And people are always sitting around talking about philosophy, which happens in, you know, the 21st century all the time.
And you do get that in this as well. So eventually, you know, the Lenny, who's played by Miley Cyrus, who does as much as she can with a very underwritten part, I would say, sort of manages to infiltrate the house in different ways. So she's basically eating all the food, which is pissing him off. And she's also sort of spreading her Maoist and, you know, kind of communist or socialist message to his wife, Kay, who then spreads it to her book club, who decide to protest the war. It just is a lot of setup for things that don't really materialise. And even then, the setup is kind of very straightforward. It's a bit disappointing.
Yeah. Big Dave also defends Miley Cyrus and says Miley Cyrus is actually a good actor with excellent comic timing. Then he undercuts the entire assertion by saying, check out her episodes on Two and a Half Men. Right, sorry for laughing, Dave. The best program on Amazon have made is Bosch, based on Michael Connelly's detective novels.
I haven't seen it, but personally, I think Amazon is trailing behind Netflix, but it's worth it for Transparent, which is really, really good.
Right, so a few bits of TV news. Saturday Night Live and Louis C.K. accused of plagiarism.
Yeah, so he was presenting last weekend's show, and during the show he did a digital sketch, which means a pre-recorded one rather than a live one, in which he played this depressed man who hired a clown to come and sort of entertain him to see if that could improve his mood. The problem with that is, a couple of years ago, an American comedian named Tig Notaro made a very similar 13-minute long short film in which she played a depressed woman who hired a clown to come and entertain her. And she has played this short film at various festivals around America and at Largo, which is a famous comedy venue in Los Angeles. And she says, she released a statement after people sort of contacted her saying, you know, that's very similar to your piece. And she said that she knows that a producer on Saturday Night Live knows that she made this short, which also is not not very good evidence for Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Also, it doesn't, you know, I think there's a bit of between the line reading going on as well, because Tig Notaro very famously made this this stand-up album called Live or Live, I can't remember which one it is, in which she talks about being diagnosed with breast cancer a couple of days before, which was really championed by Louis C.K. a couple of years ago. And in her statement about this whole unfolding scandal, she says that she and Louis haven't spoken in a year and a half. So,
did she mean that they just haven't got around to it, or some?
It was I don't know, but it was written in a very plain, matter of fact way. I'm not sure, but all in all, it's not great news for Saturday Night Live. But at the same time, what can you do about these kinds of things? I mean, I don't know if you can sue for a comedy sketch, because Saturday Night Live has been accused several times in its history, many times in its history, of plagiarism.
No, you can't, I don't think. But it actually kind of, it affects certain comedians' careers to a degree that you know, you're just ripping off X.
Funnily,
I'm surprised that Louis C.K., anyway, I went to see him when he was in Dublin a few months back, and he was just fantastic.
His jokes have famously been stolen many times by a comedian named Dane Cook in the kind of mid aughts or whatever we call that decade. And then he invited that comedian onto his show, Louis, for a joke about him stealing the parts, which was very meta, but he seems to not really mind.
Right, okay, well, yeah, I wonder the extent of then him stealing. Right, John Cleese is to return to the BBC.
Yeah, so like almost 40 years after Fawlty Towers wound down in 1979, I think, he has just signed on to star in a new, presumably six-part comedy series called Edith, with Alison Steadman, who people would know from, you know, Abigail's Party and many things.
Yeah, great actress,
And Clockwise, in which they start together in the 80s. And it is about her playing this older woman named Edith. She's a widow, and her former boyfriend, I think his name is Phil or Tony, I'm not sure, is played by John Cleese. He lives across the road from her, and he's sort of constantly chatting her up. And one day he proposes to her. Well, he proposes to her many times, and one day she finally says yes. And they're all set to sort of go off into the sunshine, happy as Larry, when her 50-year-old son arrives at her front door with a suitcase saying he's left his wife, his kids, his job, and he's moving back home.
Okay.
So that's the premise. John Cleese has said it is the funniest script he's read in ages, but that's what you would say.
Yeah, of course it is.
And he is also, it's more surprising because he has previously been very critical of the BBC. You know, he's made really damning statements about how their commissioning editors are rubbish at their job and all that kind of thing. So presumably he just has another massive alimony.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Those alimony payments don't pay themselves. Anyway, we have to take a commercial break. Coming up after that, Mystery Science Theatre 3000.
Mayday, mayday, mayday. This is Moon Base 13. We need your help.
Mayday!
No trap initiated.
What the heck?
You speak to I, Kinga Forrester, commander of the Moon 13 Research Station. I am reopening my family's most legendary experiment, Mystery Science Theater 3000.
There you go. That's a clip from Mystery Science Theatre 3000. James, is it just an excuse to look at crap old films?
Yeah, basically it is.
Well, so, I'm not dissing that. But
good. It is a very unusual show in the sense that it is known as MST3K, I should say, as well, for short. So MST3K is a bit more of a mouthful, really. But anyway, it started off in 1989 in Milwaukee as this cable access show on late night. And it basically involved the guy who created, his name is Joel Hodgson, who has gone on to write for various comedy shows and chat shows and stuff like that. And he created this show about a guy named Joel, who is an astronaut and is captured while he's in space and is forced to take part in a space experiment with these crazy, you know, mad scientists. And they force him, along with his robot pals, Tom Servo and Crow T-Robot, they force him to watch terrible B-movies, the entire length of the B-movie. And the way it was done was they had to sit as a silhouette, the three of them. There was like a row of, you know, a row of theatre seats. And then the three of them at the right corner sitting, watching their silhouette up against the screen while the movie played out. And they would essentially just riff about what they saw on screen.
Yeah.
And this was an incredibly novel thing in 1989. Far less so now. when there are countless podcasts which, you know, riff on every movie or TV show or TV series, or there are a million YouTube channels doing exactly the same thing. But in 1989, it was quite novel and incredibly popular very, very quickly in the Milwaukee, cable access system. It began to spread, I think, through sort of VHS and was ultimately picked up by a bigger network. It was championed a bit by Comedy Central, and then it was on Sci-Fi, and it ran for about 10 years, getting bigger every year. It was nominated for a couple of Emmys, and it won a Peabody Award, which is kind of this award that honors sort of remarkable pieces of pop culture more so than anything else. And basically, it just sort of disappeared, but was very fondly remembered. I don't think it ever really aired over here, but a movie was made in the 90s that was then often shown, bizarrely, on ITV, because that's how I first came across this. Now, you can still watch the old episodes on Netflix. They put about 20, or I think it's about 14, maybe 20 of them up. And it's not necessarily the most rewarding experience, because some of them are 20 years old, and the problem when riffing on cultural products is that they can date very quickly. But what happened a couple of years ago was they decided to bring the show back, and they ran a Kickstarter and raised more than $6 million in doing so.
Crikey.
So they've acquired enough dough, essentially, to get the rights to, I think it's 12 more, or 14, I should say, 14 more episodes, which stream from tomorrow on Netflix. And really, they have added a lot of polish to it. So As well as the format, we were getting Jonah Ray, who presents the Nerdist podcast, which is quite well known. Patton Oswalt, he's a very famous comic actor. Felicia Day, who is again known in sort of geek circles, you would know her to see. And basically, they're going to revamp the show and produce a brand new thing. And it's basically for people who enjoy watching dodgy rubbish movies and cracking jokes at them.
And the dodgy rubbish movies, are they brand new in the sense of they haven't been featured before?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
But they are still from the sort of 60s, 70s, as dodgy and bad as they go, because that's the whole point of the show.
Mm.
Now, it's kind of interesting because it is an anti-binge show. You know, nobody is going to come back on Monday having said, oh yeah, I watched all 14 episodes of Mystery Science Theater 3000, because they're an hour and a half long each.
Because it's a movie length.
Yeah. And also, despite the fact that in Netflix they don't have ads, they are still maintaining what they had in the original show when they had to have commercial breaks all the time. So they have these bits where they come out and do songs or introduce, fake robots. You kind of have to imagine it's a bit like Pee Wee Herman. It's kind of like a Pee Wee Herman style setting where it's this, you know, it's falling apart sets, except now it's made by Netflix. So it's deliberately falling apart. Which is, I don't know if it'll take away from the charm or not, but it certainly is a really intriguing thing to see it brought back and to see if it can capture a new audience, because what it had was this huge and loyal cult audience, and I don't know if they're still around, but it's certainly intriguing.
Is it one of those shows there where there's a massively thick layer of irony on top of everything, which after a while becomes a bit wearying?
Like your show, Sean?
Like me, yes.
No, it is, I don't know. I haven't watched, put it this way, there are 10 seasons of it. I've only ever seen a handful of episodes of the original ones. Those and some of the shorts are really, really funny. So I can't really say if there's too much irony laid on thick. But certainly for dipping in and out, it is very funny.
Okay. Texas says, don't forget, Elliot Kalin is the new head writer of Mystery Science Theatre 3000. He was head writer for The Daily Shows for years, says Ollie in Sligo. So certainly, yeah, as James is saying too, it's an excellent pedigree of the people who are working on the show. Right, we'll go to our final show of today. It's Prison Break. New episodes are on Mondays on Fox at 9 p.m. Here's a clip.
Freedom has a price. I died 7 years ago, left behind a brother, a wife, a son. But the dead talk. If you listen, they're there with you, reaching out, trying to tell you something. Because not all deaths are the same.
There you go. Breaking out from prison, but not from a series of cliches, judging from that script. For those who don't know, what is Prison Break about?
So Prison Break began, I think, in 2005 as this story about a guy named Michael Schofield, who is a genius architect and who really liked tattoos, who essentially got caught and forced into a prison because his brother Lincoln was on death row despite being wrongly convicted. So he broke into prison specifically to break himself and his brother back out of prison.
Okay.
And it was this very popular, you know, kind of B-movie TV, essentially, when it first happened in 2005. And it fell apart, really, at the end of the first season when it lived up to its premise. They broke out of prison.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, it was a kind of a jump the shark moment of, well, what do we do now that we've broken out of prison? And in the second season, they were kind of on the run. And then in the third and fourth season, it really went all over the place where they like were breaking out of prisons abroad and sort of becoming this almost spy-like network. It was really, you know, it all just fell apart once they broke out of prison. So now they have revamped it, you know, out of nowhere. No one, I don't really know anyone who was calling for it, but apparently it has been so successfully sold, I should say, around the world and has been extremely popular on streaming services that Fox, who were not afraid to throw a bit of money at an old, you know, at an old thing. They redid The X-Files, they redid, you know, the Rocky Horror Picture Show and stuff like that. They decided to bring it back for a limited 9-episode run. Now, it started on Irish TV on Monday. It has gone 2 episodes already in the US. This time around, it involves Michael, who seemingly died at the end of the series, I didn't follow through the first time. He has resurrected from the dead, which is very Easter appropriate, I suppose, and has found himself...
Well, when you say resurrected from the dead, people thought he was dead and he wasn't?
Yes,
or there was an actual resurrection?
He faked his death.
Okay.
And he is now in a prison in Yemen. And all of the... They get the band back together, which is all of the actors that were in Prison Break because they're not really doing anything else with their careers. And they head off to Yemen in order to break him out of prison, which is sort of fine as a premise, you know, I guess. Stick with what you know how to do.
Yeah.
However, they also introduce various subplots involving ISIS-controlled territories in Yemen. And to say that this Fox show doesn't quite have the sort of cultural nuance or political understanding to successfully carry this off is not an incorrect statement to make. Now, I watched the first episode last night. I have to admit, I found it almost like charmingly bad in a, like, this is just really silly hokum way. At the same time, I also, once they sort of had gathered all the characters together, I really thought, well, where's this going to go? This is going to be a couple of red herrings and wrong turns and car chases and nonsense. And that is where I foresee it going. So it's not for me. But if you like that kind of escapist TV, you know, not everything has to be incredible, you know, prestige drama in 2017. Sometimes you just want a bit of chewing gum. And in that sense, it's perfectly fine.
Yeah. Someone says, why bother bringing it back? I hated Prison Break. I'll give it a miss anyway. Well, obviously, you're not going to watch it then. James, please tell me, is there news on Peaky Blinders Season 3 coming to Netflix? I'm mad to see it and can't find good copy online.
Well, I know it just restarted on the BBC, I think it was last night. So I presume it will come along. I'm not quite sure. I can check with the Netflix people and get back to you. If you reach out to me on Twitter, I'll see what I can do. But I honestly don't know.
Going back to Woody Allen, I never liked Woody Allen, and now that you've told me he hired Miley Cyrus to play a character on TV, I respect him even less, says Sharon. You see, the thing is, says Bobbo, Woody Allen is just crap anyway. Sounds like lazy TV, no thanks. Someone else says the best show on Amazon Prime is The Man in the High Castle. Would you agree with that?
I still think it's Transparent, personally. I think it's just a very interesting and novel show. The Man in the High Castle... I would lump into the kind of Prison Break escapist nonsense category.
Yeah.
But if you like it, then you like it.
Yeah. Paula has texted in with something like a challenge for you. James, would you ever consider reviewing the soaps? Coronation Street, EastEnders, Emmerdale and the like. I'd love to get your take on them.
See, I only watch one soap and that soap is Neighbours.
Yes.
Which just went through a month of very, very good dramatic plot turns.
Yeah.
It was really good.
Well, there you go. Is that your review or
I don't want
to, you want to do a more lengthy one?
I mean, I'll do a soap next week.
I don't want to put pressure on you now.
I'll pick a soap that isn't Neighbours.
But the hard thing is you won't be able to kind of figure out what the hell's going on.
I mean, I suppose I grew up culturally in, you know, absorbing Neighbours and Coronation Street and Fair City in my house. So I still have a vague idea that somehow everyone in Fair, all the women in Fair City still think Paul is like a total ride, even though he's not. So I'll give Fair City a go.
Okay, we'll be talking about how Paul is not a total ride next week. In the meantime, James Dempsey, thanks a million for coming into us. We're going to take a break.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? GasNetworks.ie/movetogas.